lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. Another race this weekend. In fact, it's the start of a triple header, which is always good and always exciting because, quite frankly, when we go a weekend without a race, it feels weird. It feels like I'm missing something. I'm just kind of sat around going, "Wait, Sunday, I feel like I should be doing something. Is there nothing on the telly?" And it just feels very empty without a race weekend. So I, for one, am very happy that we've got a triple header coming our way. And it's kicking off for the French Grand Prix this weekend. Paul Ricard.
Yes, I remember the heady days when we used to go to Magny-Cours for the French Grand Prix, which was a series of straights connected with hairpins, which used to produce some brilliant racing. I think the problem with that was that Magny-Cours was absolutely in the middle of nowhere in the French countryside, no hotels anywhere near it, so the teams didn't like it particularly much. So Paul Ricard, which is traditionally a test track, has something like 32 different configurations they can turn that circuit into, but basically Formula One races on the main outside loop of the track, and in 2019, sadly, it was named the most boring race of the season. We returned in 2018 to Paul Ricard, and that race was fairly eventful. If you remember, Bottas was spun round by Vettel at the end of the first straight and going into turn one, and, you know, it was quite interesting, but it's normally won or lost this race in pit stops. However, they've made some changes.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it as well, because this is the racetrack with the red and the blue stripes all around it, isn't it? Yeah. So it looks, from an aerial view, it looks incredible. And it's literally got a runway next to the track. So for that reason, I think the drivers love it, because they can fly their planes and helicopters in, land, just get in the race car, and then do the same on the way out. But it looks lovely from the top. But I always find it a really confusing racetrack when you're watching the footage, because the way the stripes are kind of laid out, it just looks like an enormous car park, doesn't it? And I'm never quite sure, are they going left here? Are they going right? It's really hard to follow. But yeah, a lovely looking track. But like you say, can produce some boring races. We are due a good one. We've had some good races already this season. Obviously, lots of drama in the last race with tyres popping here, there and everywhere. Hopefully, Pirelli have got on top of that if it was a Pirelli issue. I haven't heard anything off the back of the tyre thing. I haven't heard anybody come out and say, yeah, it was definitely a Pirelli issue or it might have been debris. I know there was lots of confusion at the time. I think Pirelli were leaning towards debris and the teams were leaning towards Pirelli. So I haven't actually seen any legitimate outcome to that so far. I don't know if you have.
Apparently, they're presenting their report to the teams and the FIA either tomorrow or Thursday ahead of the French Grand Prix. I mean, Pirelli were hinting at debris, weren't they, for the failures on both Lance Stroll and Max Verstappen's cars back in Baku. But if it's something more than that, then obviously that could be an area of concern for the teams. I mean, Paul Ricard's a very fast circuit. There's some slow corners, but some really fast corners. And I think this race is going to see Mercedes back on top. They've always done well here. Hamilton's won the last two races for Mercedes at Paul Ricard, and I think it's a track that will really suit their car. There's going to be some windy conditions on that Minstrel straight down the back of the course, which will certainly unsettle the likes of Williams. And I have heard people say that the Mercedes won't like windy conditions too much on that long straight as well. I mean, we call it a boring race, but if you look, 106 laps have been raced since we returned to the track in 2018. No race last year because of COVID. But out of 106 laps, there were 73 overtakes, so it's not impossible to overtake at this circuit. And they've reprofiled it, so 70-odd percent of the track has been reprofiled. They brought in the company that redesigned Silverstone and redesigned Zandvoort. So they basically changed camber on some of the corners, made some of the corners tighter, made some of the corners faster and more sweeping. So hopefully they've done that with racing and overtaking in mind. So let's hope we get a good display.
Yeah, and usually you find when they change the tracks, even, you know, little tweaks here and there, it catches a few of the drivers out and it changes the dynamics of the track a little bit. So hopefully, like you say, there'll be some excitement. On the Mercedes topic, now I saw this week, and this was interesting, and this kind of makes sense, and it's kind of what we were talking about last week. Apparently, and this is just a rumour, but Mercedes have pretty much agreed next year to have Lewis Hamilton in the car alongside George Russell. Apparently, it's almost a done deal, and they're prepared to announce it even as early as the British Grand Prix, which would make sense, with it being Hamilton, their star driver. And then Bottas would go to Williams. That's the rumour I've read. Makes a lot of sense because they're swapping the drivers over, basically putting Bottas in the Williams. That will bring a lot of experience to Williams. May not be the best and the fastest racing driver in the world, but he's got a lot of experience in a top team. So he could go to Williams with some very interesting information. And, you know, he knows the Mercedes engine very well as well. And of course, George Russell in the Mercedes is exactly what we need to see. I think that's a driver that I think that would be a Perez and Max situation where he would very much keep Hamilton honest, you know, and the idea of next year, the rule changes. So the cars are going to be different with different rules. You're going to have potentially, you know, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull with Sergio Perez potentially again next year alongside Hamilton and George Russell in the Mercedes with the rule changes. You know, you've got some really fast drivers in some potentially really fast cars. Ferrari will probably be back in the mix. McLaren will be properly in the mix next year, hopefully. So that could be a really exciting season next year.
Yeah, we've talked so much about the rule changes. We know the majority of stuff that's coming and the cars are going to be almost, you know, identical in terms of aerodynamics and the wing setup and the configuration of the engines and the size of the cars and the wheelbase and all that stuff. It's going to be about the teams who get the advance on the development. You know, we hear that Mercedes are 80% concentrating on next year now. The Haas team 100% concentrating on next year in terms of car development. So, it, you know, it's going to be really interesting. And I think the drivers who are not moving teams will probably have the upper hand, won't they? Because they'll be privy to some of that development. They might even be in the simulators already practicing on the 2022 car, whereas teams that are taking on new drivers, they're probably going to be on the back foot just a little bit. But having said that, the likes of George Russell, he's a Mercedes development driver anyway, so he probably is, especially if the move is in the works. He's probably privy to that information from the Mercedes team already. You know, and Bottas just hasn't proved himself this year. It's been his worst start to a season since he joined the Mercedes team. He's been with Williams before, of course, so what a backwards move that would be. But like you say, he takes that knowledge and experience of working with his engineers and the Mercedes power unit and everything back to another Mercedes-powered team.
It's been a strange year this year because I know we've mentioned this already, but you know, the likes of Ricciardo just not getting to grips yet with that McLaren. I predicted early on that Perez would get his stuff together and would be pretty good. And I think he said, give me four or five races to get up to speed. And it was the sixth race, wasn't it, that he won. So, I mean, that's your perfect CV, isn't it? Give me four or five races to get up to speed. Then I'll show you what I can do. Bang, there's a win. Wallop. And I think, you know, Red Bull would be silly not to retain Perez for next year. You know, they've got no real amazing young drivers coming through. I mean, Gasly's obviously brilliant at the moment, but they've already had him in the Red Bull. So would they make the move of putting him back in over Perez? I don't think so. So my gut feeling tells me they'll retain Perez for another year or two. I think if he carries on like he is and he gets some more wins this season, you know, they could sign him to a couple of, you know, multi-year deals. So he's with Max for a couple of years, which would be good for the stability of the team. Obviously, Red Bull are going to be building their own engine. They're taking over the Honda engine and kind of building their own engine factory. So that's going to be interesting in the future. But I think there's lots to look forward to. And it's a great season this year. Like we said before, the, you know, the Red Bulls, this is as close as they've ever been to the Mercedes. The Mercedes is struggling and it's good. It's good racing so far. And I've got a funny feeling, like we said before, triple header. And I've got a funny feeling we've got a couple of good races coming. I don't know why. I just get this weird gut feeling when I think there's going to be an amazing race on the way. And I do think at least one of these three is going to be an absolute belter.
Yeah, I do think if you're a Red Bull fan, you're going to be slightly disappointed this weekend because I don't think you're going to see them dominate in any of the sessions and the race. I think Mercedes really do or will have the upper hand. I think they've kind of got rid of the stability and tyre warming issues they had at the start of the season. And we know they're fast in a straight line. And their real tyre comes into the window on those fast left and right sweeping corners, which in Baku and Monaco we didn't have. But here at Paul Ricard, we're going to have those turns again. And Lewis Hamilton seems to love it round here. As I say, he's won the last two outings. So it's going to be interesting. Red Bull, I think, are still developing the car and bringing new parts. The other team that interests me is Alpine because we saw Alonso have a good outing in Baku, especially on the restart towards the end of the race. He did really well. I think he overtook three or four cars on that two-lap restart race. So that will be interesting. They're still developing this year's car, and obviously this is their home Grand Prix, so they're going to want to do well.
Yeah, I saw Alonso on his Instagram, actually. He put something along the lines of, this is why I love to race, or this is why I still love racing, or something. And he put the video footage of him doing the overtakes on the restart. And you can tell, you know, he's still very much a racer. He still absolutely loves it. He lives to race. You know, every time he's in a car, he's buzzing. You know, and it's interesting this year that he's still a great racer, Alonso. He's not lost any of his touch. But again, he's another driver that's got in that Alpine, and he's not blown his teammate away. He kind of expected him to come in and blow Ocon away, and he hasn't. And the same with Ricciardo. I thought Ricciardo could get in that McLaren and blow you know, little Lando away, but Lando's been really mature and brilliant this year, and he's kind of been the team leader so far. And there's been some surprising drivers that have moved to surprising teams with surprisingly poor results. So it's been a fascinating, interesting year so far. But yeah, Alonso is another one for me who he's going to get up to speed in the next couple of races. He's had a couple of years out of Formula One, so he's a bit out of touch. But I think, you know, he's going to show his form by the end of the year because he is a phenomenal, and he's what I call an all-round racing driver. You know, he can qualify well, he can race well, he can overtake well. He's got a lot of skills. I definitely probably have him in my top five, definitely in my top 10 of all time. I think he's great.
The other team to look forward to watch on circuit this weekend is Aston Martin. Lance Stroll running very, very well in Baku until his tyre blowout, and Sebastian Vettel getting the podium, of course, which is the first time for him for a long while. Now, I thought they would be down on power in Baku with their long straights, but obviously they weren't. They were able to mix it up with the top teams. And again, with Paul Ricard being a fairly fast circuit, you know, a big long start-finish straight and a massive long back straight with some fast corners in between. A couple of slow ones, but mostly fast. You know, it could make a good package for the Aston Martin team, and Vettel's confidence must be back up there again.
Yeah, and, you know, we said it last week. I'm a big fan of Vettel. He's always been a great driver in my eyes. I think he's a really nice guy. I've seen quite a lot of videos of him coming up to the younger drivers and giving them advice and congratulating them and having a bit of a laugh with them. And he never takes himself too seriously. And I felt really sorry for him because I felt he had a big lull at Ferrari. He was proper struggling mentally in that team, I think. And he just had no confidence, no sort of excitement in his own ability. And he just struggled the whole time. And, you know, I thought that was quite sad to see, but yeah, great to see him back on the podium. I think he deserved it. He came alive. He was buzzing on the radio. He was, you know, happy and smiling again in the pit lane. And it was just nice to see kind of the old Vettel back. And hopefully, like you say, that'll give him a bit of a spurt on for the rest of the season and he'll do really good now.
Now, let's briefly talk about Romain Grosjean. He was supposed to be testing the Mercedes Formula One car at this weekend, but unfortunately, the date clash with his IndyCar commitments meant that it's been postponed. But he will test the Mercedes as promised by Toto Wolff at some point of Paul Ricard later on in the year. Ironically, in the IndyCar race over the weekend in Detroit, Romain Grosjean broke down and his car caught fire with him in it. Smoke and flames coming out. He jumped out of that car like a true professional. Of course, he's got form for that, of course, after Bahrain last year. But that was interesting to see. All was well in the end. And well done to Marcus Ericsson, former Formula One driver who won the IndyCar race in Detroit. His first win in any formula for 8 years. So hats off to you, Mr. Marcus Ericsson.
Yeah, great for him. And yeah, Roman, like you say, is just amazing. When he got out of the car, he's running around like throwing his arms up going, where's the fire extinguisher? Where's the fire extinguisher? And then tried to put the fire out himself. At that point, the fire brigade turn up and they're like, leave this to us. This is our job. We'll sort this. But, you know, amazing that, you know, after everything he's been through with fire, he's still jumping out looking for a fire extinguisher. And I think he did some videos and stuff on Twitter and he's basically like, you know, I love my race cars. I wanted to put her out because, you know, she caught, I think it was the wheels that were on fire. The brakes caught fire, didn't they? And I think he was trying to stop it from damaging too much more of the car kind of thing so he could carry on racing that weekend. But yeah, just incredible when you think what that guy's been through. The first thing he thought of was jump out and go and find a fire extinguisher and put my own fire out. Amazing.
We await to hear the Pirelli outcome on the tyre failures in Baku. They are bringing three compounds from the middle of their range for this race. They say that Paul Ricard is more demanding on tyres than circuits like Baku. So with recent failures in mind, that's obviously going to leave some drivers with a bit of a worry, unless they come clean and say it was debris and not a tyre failure. The C2, the C3 and the C4 for this weekend's race means nothing really to me, but it is the middle of the range, so not soft, not hard, kind of in the middle, which they say will sustain the drivers enough for a good outing at Paul Ricard. What are you laughing at?
Is that how you describe yourself?
Yes, exactly. It's not too soft, not too hard. Well, I'm pushing 50, Scott, you know. That's what happens at our age.
No, like you say, hopefully, if it was, you know, a tyre failure or whatever, hopefully they've got to grips with that and they worked out what exactly caused that. Because, you know, at those sort of speeds, it's just horrifically dangerous. And we shouldn't have issues like that in this day and age. The tyres should be, you know, the last thing that the drivers are worried about going. You know, when you're driving at those kind of speeds, you really are putting trust in your mechanics and trust in that car and trust in all those elements, aren't you? And, you know, these guys really do have balls of steel when you see some of these failures that happen.
Before we go to Nicky, our stat man for this weekend's stats and facts and figures on the French Grand Prix, let's have a little bit of a discussion about the Williams team. Did you see their new CEO came out this week and said they're about to unveil a 2- and 3-year plan for the team to get them back to the head of the grid? They've got major investments coming. Obviously, they like to fill the car with experienced drivers. And if Bottas is going there, that would make perfect sense, wouldn't it, to sort of start the rebuild with a very experienced driver who's been in a car that has led and won races in the past. What are you thinking about Williams' future in the sport?
Yeah, I think I'm right in saying that Ferrari, McLaren and Williams are the three most successful teams of all time in Formula One. So it'd be great to see them right back up there at the top. You know, they've had a woeful couple of years, haven't they? And they've had some real struggles, both financially and with the team and drivers and mechanics. And, you know, they've lost morale. And then obviously Frank's sold the team on. You know, and they've had a shocking few years, and I think they do deserve to be back up there. It's a name that I always think of when I think of Formula One. You know, Williams, McLaren, Ferrari, they're all the names that you think of, but it's one of the names that's always up there, and I'd love to see them back at the front again. I think they can do it, of course. We've seen it before, haven't we, with teams that struggle, and you look at some of the cars now that are at the top, and you think, you know, that car used to be this team, and that car used to be this team, and now they're right at the top of the grid, and they were, you know, mid-carders at best before as another team guys. So they can definitely get up there. I think that's what they need. You know, they need a new management structure. They need some money pumped into the team. If they can get a Bottas or an experienced driver as well, then great. You know, and you've obviously got the young George, who's brilliant. He's a superb, very fast driver, but you almost need someone to come in with a lot of experience of setting up the cars and to talk the engineers through what they need to do to change these cars. It's interesting as well. I saw Hamilton made a comment this week, you know, talking about how Formula One needs to get cleaner and greener. And he said he finds it strange. And until he said this, I hadn't really thought about it. He said the cars are getting bigger and heavier. And he said, you know, that's the worst thing you can do if you're trying to save the environment. You know, he said they should be young, light, sprightly cars. He said, you know, go back 10 years ago, these things were like little go-karts on rails. He said, now they're big, heavy cars. And it's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. If you look at a Formula One car from the 60s and go through from 60s to sort of now, the size difference in the cars is incredible. Even 10 years ago, if you look at a 2007, 2008 car next to a 2021 car, it's mind-boggling how much bigger they are.
It really is. Before we talk about Ferrari and make our predictions for this weekend's race, let's get some stats from our pro stats man. It's Nicky at Lights Out. You can follow his blog across the weekend. He's got some new things coming for the French Grand Prix as well. Just follow him on Twitter and social media platforms at Lights Out. Here he is with everything you need to know ahead of the French Grand Prix.
From Raikkonen's record-equalling appearance in car number 7 to Hamilton's chance to equal the record for most consecutive wins at Circuit Paul Ricard, here are the top statistics to look out for at the 2021 French Grand Prix. First up at this weekend's French Grand Prix, Kimi Raikkonen will make his 162nd appearance in car number 7. That will see him equal former Lotus teammate Romain Grosjean as the driver to have made the most starts with a single car number. Grosjean made 162 appearances in car number 8 during his career. Raikkonen is set to overtake Grosjean's record at next week's Styrian Grand Prix. Next up, Lewis Hamilton, and it has now been over 14 years since his first F1 victory at the 2007 Canadian Grand Prix. Should he win this weekend, he would be the third driver, after Michael Schumacher and Kimi Raikkonen, to have a gap of more than 14 years between his first and last Grand Prix wins. Meanwhile, a win for Hamilton at the French Grand Prix would see him become only the second driver to have won 3 races at Circuit Paul Ricard. Alain Prost won here 4 times during his career. If he wins, Hamilton would equal Prost's record of 3 consecutive victories at the circuit. Though he started from the pole slot at the restart of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, Sergio Perez is yet to take pole position in Formula One. And unless Perez takes pole at the 2021 French Grand Prix, he'll become the first driver to have qualified for 200 Grand Prix without starting from pole. The current record for most races before a driver's first pole position is 131, set by Mark Webber at the 2009 German Grand Prix, a number which Perez would beat by almost 70 races if he takes pole this weekend. And finally, the French Grand Prix has been a happy hunting ground for French drivers in the past. Most notably, in 1982, all of the top four finishers were French drivers. But there's been less luck for French drivers at home in recent years. Pierre Gasly is the only Frenchman to score on home soil since the event's return to the calendar in 2018. He finished 10th in 2019. Both Gasly and Esteban Ocon were out on the first lap in 2018, and should either retire on the first lap this year, they'll become the first driver to record multiple first lap retirements at Circuit Paul Ricard.
Thank you, Nicky. Of course, you can follow him across the race weekends, as always, at Lights Out, where you can find him on Twitter. I think the most amazing stat there, Hamilton's first win 14 years ago. He's now got 7 world titles, which means, on average, he's winning a world title every other year of his career, which is amazing, isn't it, when you think about it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the Mercedes are going to be back on top this weekend. I think it's going to be a good weekend for Hamilton. I think Bottas definitely needs a good weekend as well. If he doesn't have a good weekend this weekend, he's in real trouble. But yeah, I can see the Red Bulls up there. I can see the McLarens up there. I think the Alpines are going to have a good weekend, and the Aston Martins as well. It could literally be anyone's game in the midfield. But I'm going to say a Hamilton pole and a Hamilton win. I think Max will be on the podium. And I'm going to say that I think we're going to get a surprise podium. So it could be a Lando Norris podium actually this weekend as well.
Do you need to evacuate? There's a fire alarm going off.
Yeah, that's my old man alarm. When we said not quite soft, not quite hard, it went, yeah, that's the old man alarm going off as well. So hello there.
I'm just looking out of my studio window watching a British gas engineer who's opened a manhole and then tripped over and face planted the pavement. It's fantastic. Really, your fire alarm's going off. I've got British gas outside. So let's make my predictions for the race. I think it's going to be a fairly boring Hamilton 1, Bottas 2, Verstappen 3. We haven't really touched on the Ferraris. You know, they've proved now that their pace is right back up there again, which will be great to see at the French Grand Prix. I think Carlos Sainz has amazed everyone by just how quickly he's become assimilated with that car. It's just amazing that the work he's done in the background to be really up to speed almost straight away. So that's going to be an interesting battle to watch. And of course, the Alpine team, as we know, they've got Ocon, French driver, in that team. Pierre Gasly, a French driver, in the AlphaTauri. You know, it's going to be an interesting race for the local drivers too. Let's hope for a good one. Lots of overtakes, and we'll be here next week to review the French Grand Prix. Enjoy.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.